l'œil Salvador. Salut à toi l'œil Molodoy. Salut à toi l'œil Chinois. Salut à toi l'œil Zaïrois. Salut à toi l'Espagnol. Salut à toi l'œil Ravachol. Salut à toi.
And WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Verno with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, January 21st. It's shuffle time for Sarasota Republicans. Senator Joe Gruters is dropping his Senate seat to run for chief financial officer, and termed out State Representative James Buchanan has filed to run for Gruters' Senate seat. That in turn triggered three Republicans to file for Buchanan's House District 74 seat, which covers most of the area east of I-75 and the southern part of Sarasota County. The latest candidate to make a bid for that seat is Nick Paciotta, the 41-year-old mayor of Venice. The other two who have filed to run in 2026 so far are fellow Republicans Chris Felder and Les Nichols. Michelle Pazzi, the Northport MAGA firebrand who ran against Buchanan in 2024, is reportedly considering another run as well. A commercial developer wants to build a 140-unit affordable housing complex on the DeSoto Square Mall property in Bradenton. That's the second housing complex planned for the shuttered mall. According to paperwork filed with Manatee County, the DeSoto Apartments affordable housing community would be built on 5 acres at the north end of the former mall. The applicant's annual income determines their monthly rent, which would be $1,340 on average. Governor Ron DeSantis has declared a state of emergency ahead of the winter weather forecast to bring snow and ice to North Florida this week. A cold front is expected to bring up to 4 inches of snow in the panhandle and 1/4 inch of ice from the eastern panhandle through the Suwannee River. This means tree damage, downed power lines, and frozen over roads and bridges. Conditions could present a major disaster as far south as central Florida. One of Governor Ron DeSantis's agencies is uttering the words climate change. In a budget request, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection wrote, quote, "As ground zero for the effects of climate change, Florida needs to be prepared for sea level rise, flooding, and increasingly severe storm events," unquote. Investigative journalist Jason Garcia brought this up on his Seeking Rents Substack. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, January 21st.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV 100.1 FM in Bradenton.
This is show 54 of Our Changing Environment. The previous show was Corduroy, hosted by Sebastian.
I'm Julie Morris.
I'm John O'Miller.
Today we are talking with Dr. Mary Hardy, the Executive Director of Friends of Myakka River.
The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interviews, shows, on-air personalities, and from our calling guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. The opinions or views expressed by same do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, our staff, or volunteers.
Our guest today, again, is Dr. Mary Hardy. And Mary was our first guest on Our Changing Environment. And today we will be discussing updates on multiple Myakka River issues. So, Mary, we're so happy to have you with us in the studio today. And we would like to talk about a number of things, the Dark Skies Initiative, water quality issues, the encroaching urbanization approaching from the west towards Myakka River State Park. So let's just get started.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be back here. It's been an incredible 2 years.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. So tell us about Dark Skies.
Dark Skies is an initiative that we recently started working on. As a lot of people are aware, historically, Myakka River State Park was located in a completely rural area. There was no development for miles. I'm fairly new to this area. I got here 10 years ago. I've had the pleasure to speak with folks who grew up in Sarasota and remember the approach to the park 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago when you would drive for miles and you would see nothing. So when we talk about dark sky, we're talking about the natural night sky with no artificial light pollution. And when we talk about pollution, a lot of us think about trash. Light creates pollution in the sky. Light pollution is artificial light that is misdirected. These are things like our street lights. These are things like our security lights in our backyards. These are things like light from inside our homes that escapes outside. What happens with extra light in the environment is it escapes and it basically creates a glow in the sky. And obviously, I'm, in the interest of time, slightly oversimplifying what actually happens. As a result of this night glow, one immediate consequence is we're reducing our ability to see the stars. So many are aware that Friends of Myakka River, which exists to support Myakka River State Park and the wild and scenic Myakka River, was founded by Dr. Mary Jelks. I had a conversation with her daughter, Dr. Helen Jelks King, who mentioned she remembers as a child coming to the park and being able to see the Milky Way. We can no longer see the Milky Way in the park. In a recent presentation that I gave to the Myakka River Management Coordinating Council, I illustrated the increase in light pollution over the past 10 years as a result of encroaching development. And as you mentioned, Julie, development is rapidly encroaching from the west. It is also encroaching from the north. And basically, if you can imagine light going up into the atmosphere, which is actually visible from satellites, amazingly, so we can produce maps that illustrate increases in light pollution and how it's spreading and surrounding our natural areas. The problem is, of course, we can't see the stars, which is, you know, pretty upsetting. We're changing the world that we're living in. Importantly, we are also changing our natural places because of the light pollution. Light pollution has an impact on wildlife. It has an impact on plants even. And so, in essence, we are destroying the places that we have promised to protect.
So, Julie, you had mentioned earlier that Mary was our first guest. Mm-hmm. We have another first today. And we have posted two of those before and after pictures.
Oh, fantastic.
on our Facebook group. So don't do this if you're driving. But if you're listening at home and have access to a computer, you can go on Facebook to our changing environment and see the change in light pollution in the Myakka area. Yeah. There's a before and after picture there on the website. So check it out.
And one thing that's really important to point out, well, two things. The after map is from 2023 because this data is generated by NASA satellite imagery that is only made available at the end of a year. A lot has happened in 2024, and I am awaiting the next set of data, which will hopefully be available by the middle of next month. And honestly, I fear what we're going to see. I fear what we're going to see, but things have definitely gotten worse.
So people who have outdoor lights can modify their lights in a way that reduces the light pollution trespassing on the park.
Absolutely. This is one of the exciting things about this particular problem. If you think about light pollution is a form of habitat loss. So by introducing light into the environment, we are excluding some species, we are changing other species' behavior. Unlike the impact of a tractor that comes in and destroys a habitat, if you just change your lighting, so if you make sure that your light is shielded, it is pointing downwards, so no light is escaping upwards, and if it's not necessary, don't have it.
Right. Either, you know, switching to either the motion-sensitive or heat-sensitive lights alert you when there's something in your yard. Now, it may be a raccoon, but you would at least notice when the lights come on. Yeah. But we have neighbors, and their lights are on all night. We just had our street light replaced, and it looks like Stalag 17 or something, this bright light shining down on the pavement. And, of course, your eyes adjust to that brightness, and then you can't see as well.
Yeah.
So it's actually working contrary to, you know, if it was all dark, your eyes would adjust. In fact, we enjoy, when there's a power failure, we enjoy going out in the neighborhood and walking around and seeing the stars and the silhouettes of the trees that are hard to pick up on when everything's over-illuminated.
Yeah.
So there is one state preserve that has a dark skies initiative going. And tell us about that.
Yeah, so Kissimmee Prairie State Park is the only dark sky designated park in Florida. And you can see the Milky Way. What is typically true of dark sky parks is they are surrounded by dark areas. Because again, this is the challenge. It's the challenge with any kind of pollutant, but especially with light. You can have the best practices in your house. As Jano, as you pointed out, you can be dark sky compliant. You can have everything shielded. You can be using the warmer temperatured lights because, again, blue LED lights are the worst for light pollution. You can be doing everything right, and if your neighbor isn't, that ruins everything. So again, the park hasn't increased their lighting, but the surrounding areas have. And we are talking about light from a distance as far as the intersection of River Road with I-75. So, I mean, that's how far light can have an impact on the park. Per your question, Julie, the solution obviously cannot just be park-focused. It's about how do we create a dark sky reserve that surrounds the park where, again, this is a change that can happen gradually. This is a change that does not take away the light. It just changes how people use their light in a way that does not negatively impact a place that is so central to everyone who lives here in Sarasota and Manatee County. Myakka River State Park and the wild and scenic Myakka River hold a very special place to everyone here. So the key is protecting it so that we do not lose this amazing natural gem.
So it seems like there's light pollution from the National Cemetery on
Yes.
your way to the park, right?
Yes.
And then it seems like the conservation lands that have been purchased by Sarasota County are mostly on the east side of the Myakka
Right.
River, and it's the encroaching residential developments from the west
that are
the source of the light pollution.
But it's complicated. So we have the Carlton Reserve, which was acquired for two purposes, to protect the environment and for water supply. The original plans for the Carlton Reserve was that the wellheads would be there and the water would be pumped across the Myakka to the Knights Trail Park and the processing facility would be on the west side of the river. But for some reason that I've never been able to find out, the facility was placed on the Carlton Reserve. And that place is a major
light source.
Yeah.
And then we also have the the interchange lighting on the interstate, mm-hmm. and the interstate's sort of paralleling the river to the west and then crosses the river. So when you canoe down the river, even in the day, the light poles are conspicuous as you approach 75, and at night it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So all we need to get FDOT to start rethinking how we're illuminating our interstate interchanges.
I think a lot of it is, well, it's two things. It's design, as you pointed mm-hmm. out. Once you start learning more about light pollution, you never look at light fixtures mm-hmm. the same. It's a bit of a curse. I drive around and completely in shock. But if you look at those light fixtures that FDOT has put at the intersections, they are huge. Yeah. They are so tall. Yeah. And I think the idea is to try to cover as much area as you can with one light fixture.
Yeah.
But that results in a lot of light pollution, but it also results in a lot of energy waste. Yeah. So you can actually save energy by having more thoughtful fixtures. So, you know, that is critical. And back to this whole idea of why were things better in previous years? If you look at a cattle ranch, they have some light fixtures, but you know, you don't need to light up your entire cattle ranch. That's not something
right.
people do.
Right.
And the main challenge has been with increases in density. As developments come in, suddenly you're lighting up for 100 homes, for 1,000 homes, for 5,000 homes, and that has a huge increase on the amount of light that's being introduced into the night sky.
And we've noticed when we're doing the bird count at Myakka that there are a number of cell towers that you can see from inside the park.
Yeah,
and I've fought several of those cell towers.
Yeah.
And my favorite is the one that's just north of 72 as you're approaching from the west, and they actually submitted documents to the county saying this tower will not be visible from Myakka River State Park.
Yeah.
And the problem with that one, and I think with the others, is when we got to the hearings, people came forward and said, well, my daughter fell off her horse and was in a critical medical situation, and we couldn't call the ambulance.
Because there was no cell service.
Because there's no cell service. So what's the county going to say? Well, your daughter should have died on the spot? No, they say, oh, well, then we have to have cell service.
Yeah.
And so we have these really tall towers with their blinking lights.
Yeah.
And they're surrounding, they're, you know, the other thing is people would like to have cell service on the interstate.
Hmm.
And so for navigation or whatever. So we're seeing natural areas being surrounded by towers because they don't want to put the towers in the park.
Yeah.
And so it's a problem. I'm hoping ultimately that technology evolves and either it'll all be done by satellite or there'll be more smaller towers or there'll be some solution that's not as obnoxious and threat to low-flying aircraft.
I think the challenge is, and the reason you started off with a fairly long laundry list of the work that we've recently been involved in, Julie, there's a great sense of urgency, and that is the challenge. Jono, you shared the map that I generated using lightpollutionmap.info, which everyone can access and plug in their own address and see what it shows. I also generated a map for Oscar Scheer State Park.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
this is a park that is now completely surrounded by development. And there are consequences. You mentioned the bird counts. The bird count is a really fantastic annual event that also gives us data, so an opportunity to compare across years. And Oscar Scheer is having a lot of difficulties with there is less wildlife. We can see it. Again, I've only been here 10 years. I've seen it. Folks who work at Oscar Scheer State Park, folks who visit, they can see the changes. And again, if you look at the map, they are completely covered now with light pollution. And there's the other types of pollution, obviously, that come along with development getting way too close to our natural gems here in Sarasota County and Manatee County.
So you also volunteer for beach nesting birds.
Yes.
With Sarasota Audubon. And
Audubon, Florida.
Audubon, Florida. Okay. And you you noticed on your bird count that there were a lot of black skimmers that were using Upper Myakka Lake in the month of December. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I actually pivoted into my current career in environmental education and environmental advocacy as a result of my experiences on the beach here in Sarasota County. I got involved with the beach stewarding program over 7 years ago and have seen how our birds on the beaches, our state-imperiled black skimmers and snowy plovers, have been facing growing threats on the beaches. As you mentioned, during our Christmas bird count this year, we had a record number of black skimmers in the park, 158. The previous record was set in 2003, I believe, and it was 28 birds. So this is a massive increase. Now, they weren't just on the Upper Myakka Lake. They were located in three different areas in the park, including the Wilderness Preserve. If I was a bird, that's where I would go. It's nice and quiet and beautiful, and only 30 people are allowed down there a day. But yeah, this was a massive amount of birds. We did see a very large flock of black skimmers, again, a state-imperiled species, in the park. This is a coastal bird, so going that far inland is not something that they typically do. During their wintering months, they don't necessarily hang out where they nest, but they don't go that far inland. What was really unique this year is that we spotted a juvenile black skimmer from North Carolina. We know this thanks to bird banding. This bird had been spotted a couple of months ago in South Carolina, so heading south for the winter, then on Longboat Key, and then in the park. What is happening on our beaches right now, which is very concerning, are red tide blooms that obviously make it very difficult for black skimmers to stay on the coast. That they're moving to the park is very significant because we've been involved, the park has been involved in some fairly extensive habitat restoration projects and efforts to restore the natural flow of the river, and to see an imperiled species respond to that, to those efforts so dramatically, is really, really significant and really heartwarming.
That's the sound of black skimmers, right?
Yeah, they sort of bark, I guess.
They do. You clearly share my love for black skimmers.
Can you summarize what the whole federal partnership is about?
Okay, so the federal partnership is another way of talking about national designation of rivers as wild and scenic. So a lot of people here in Sarasota County are familiar with the wild and scenic designation that the Myakka River has. We are the only wild and scenic river here in Florida, and that comes with...
The only state.
Wild and scenic river here in Florida, and that comes with protections that are intended to keep the river in its pristine and natural state. And one could argue that it is thanks to those protections that we are continuing to enjoy our beautiful river. And I know that, you know, Jono, you are obviously at the forefront of these efforts to protect our river, and it has not been easy.
Right. It's been a long pull, and Julie and I were both involved when the original federal study was done to see if the Myakka would qualify for federal designation. And it's interesting, there has been some development. I'm thinking, south of the Jelks Preserve, But in general, there's more of the river protected now than there was in the 80s. The weir or spillway at the upper lake has come out. And, of course, one of the things the federal program considered was whether there were any unnatural obstructions in the river. And their plans to remove the so-called Downs's Dam at the south end of the park. So the river, in many ways, has gotten better than it was when the feds first looked at it. And I think I felt afterwards that it was probably a good thing that it was not a traditional. You know, we think about the Federal Wild and Scenic River Program, and you think of these, like the Snake River, like these major rivers that people tube on, and it's challenging. And you know, half the year, like right now, the Myakka is flowing at, what did you say, Julie?
1.5 is the stage.
Okay, the stage, the height of the river is 1.5. Well, you can't canoe the river if it's below 2. And so had it been designated a federal river, we might have had people in Ohio putting canoes on their car and driving down here hoping to paddle the river, only to find out that it was as wide as this recording studio and there was no water in it. So there actually is a USGS study that identifies the Myakka as a zero-flow river, which means there are no springs. It's not like the Crystal River or some of the rivers further north that are spring-fed. There's no measurable freshwater flow into the river. And so when it stops raining, as it basically...
Since Milton,
we have had insignificant rain.
Yeah.
So when it stops raining, the river stops flowing. And then when it rains a lot, the river is more than a mile wide. And so traditional image people have of a federal wild and scenic river, this new partnership program is different. Federal employees or federal rules, it would primarily be to protecting the river.
I think a good way to think about it is it's called partnership because it is a partnership with the National Park Service. It basically highlights exceptional natural resources and celebrates them, that keeping them that way involves resources, including funds. So there are very significant federal funds that are allocated to a nationally designated river. A lot of folks will use those funds for things like a river ambassador. So it's a person who has a dedicated role of advocating for the river and educating people on the river and keeping tabs on the river, just making sure that any local regulations are kept in check and educating people about them and reaching out to the appropriate authorities if there is a need. There is also access to additional grant funds, which would be extremely beneficial for the park and for the river. And extremely exciting, actually, is the ability to tap into National Park Service resources. For example, they have a specific division that is dedicated to night skies. So they have folks who have the expertise to come in and identify where light pollution is coming from and come up with solutions. And considering everything what we talked about, that kind of resource for the park and the river would be amazing. So it's a win-win situation, and we're very, very grateful to Congressman Stuby and his office for helping push this forward.
Right, and so he'll be reintroducing it in this Congress. And if we could get this money, as Amiri was pointing out, it could help us with staffing, with outreach or education, with exotic control, which is an issue. We have issues with Kogan grass and other plants along the river, monitoring studies. And the thing about monitoring is when the original Myakka, the state act, was passed, it specifically said that there would be periodic studies to determine the quality and mixture, or I guess quantity and mixture, of recreation and other public uses which can be permitted without adverse impact to the resource values of the river. Well, that was in 1985, and there's yet to be a single periodic study. So it's a long period. And we need to get with Sarasota County, with Swift Mud, with probably the Wildlife Commission, and put together a proposal to actually go out and study how human use is affecting the resources. We've had, recently, the last few years, we had a big flap regarding people illegally taking shark's teeth from the river. That's a resource, a public resource. If you're just walking down the riverbank and see a shark's tooth, you can pick it up, but that's not what was happening. People were using hydraulic dredging. They were cutting down trees and damming the river. They were people were selling sediment from the river in buckets so you could look for your own shark's teeth. So it was becoming a commercial exploited resource. And then there was the gentleman who was near Snookhaven looking for fossils and was bit by an alligator. So that the news story was supposed to be about how this poor guy was injured, but what a lot of people heard was, oh, you can look for shark's teeth in the Mac River. So that inadvertently led to, and this is something we've been experiencing, is social media is killing us.
Yes.
If you see a rare bird, if there are all these people that go down and take illegal drone footage or other footage of Deep Hole, which encourages more people to go to Deep Hole, and Chris Oliver, who's works for the state and helps with the MACA Council and monitoring of the river, is finding decreasing numbers of gators at Deep Hole. So all these efforts to broadcast things on social media can create problems.
You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV 100.1 FM in Bradenton. The Boxster Diversity Initiative presents Power in the People: Social Justice in America Since the Civil Rights Movement on Thursday, January 23rd at 6 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalists of Sarasota, 3975 Fruitville Road. This panel discussion includes Xander Moritz, the founder and executive director of the Social Equity Through Education Alliance, a coalition of thousands of grassroots organizers based in Florida. He was a primary plaintiff in the Don't Say Gay lawsuit against Governor Ron DeSantis and the state of Florida, which was victoriously settled this year. The event is open to the public, but seating may be limited. For more information and registration, visit BoxerVersityInitiative.org or call 941-321-7852. That number is 941-321-7852. Doesn't the partnership also include things beyond the MIACA? Am I wrong about that?
Beyond what sense?
A larger region. No.
Not aware of that.
Okay. No. Okay. I'm wrong about that.
That's so. Okay. So, you know, we talked about how the flow is so variable in the MIACA and the flooding during Ian, and then the more recent flooding.
Debbie.
Yeah. And so I guess, is it this morning that the County Commission is hearing about flooding?
Yeah.
From Debbie, yeah.
The workshop.
Yeah. Right.
Steve Swaz is having presenting his analysis of what
right,
went
and we've had Steve
Debbie.
On the show, mm-hmm. and yeah. I guess he's been on Kathy and Tuna's show as well.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that all of this flooding awareness is going to help the commission rethink whether increased density in areas known to flood is a great idea.
Yeah. What you were talking about before, Jono, about people not understanding the impact that they are having on the environment, I think this past year has helped a lot of us understand a lot about wetlands, their function, their importance, and also the fact that wetlands aren't always wet. If you
right.
think about MIACA River State Park
right.
and how much water was there during Ian, how much water was there during Debbie and where that water would have gone if there was no Myakka River State Park, because water has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Water has to go somewhere. And in times of floods, the water reclaims the floodplains. And we all really got educated very well this year about what a floodplain is.
Yeah. Every drop of water that reaches Charlotte Harbor from the Myakka watershed has to flow through Northport one way or another. It's either in Deer Prairie Slough, the Myakka River, Big Slough, Myakka Hetchy Creek, or overland. And so the more water that can be stored temporarily upstream of Northport, the less flooding problems people are going to have in Northport.
Yeah.
And it's an issue. And as you say, wetlands aren't always wet. I remember we would when we were doing consulting work, we would deal with landowners, excuse me, who would play dumb and say, "Well, I don't know what a wetland is exactly." And I would say, "Well, a wetland's where your attorney doesn't want to walk because it would ruin his shoes."
Yeah.
And so they're pretty dry sometimes.
Yeah.
And all that, that hammock adjacent to the Myakka, the cabbage palm and live oak hammock, that's all technically wetland, even though people don't like to think of it that way.
Yeah.
It's in the 1 to 2 annual floodplain of the Myakka.
Yeah. And I think the challenge as well is a lot of us have heard the term wetland mitigation. So there's that sense, oh, we can make this go away. It's really not, it's not an issue. And again, as we found out this year, yes, it is an issue, and we become extremely concerned when then you have proposals to increase density in the Myakka floodplain. There's a application in progress to put in a development of 100 houses immediately north of the park. We're talking less than a quarter of a mile north of the park on a parcel that is hydrologically linked to the park. So again, this is very, very concerning, and we're hopeful that there will be good response from the commissioners to again understand that this is something we need to be looking at very, very carefully in the interest of our communities and in the interest of protecting our natural resources.
Yeah, we're in this strange situation where even though Myakka Park is split between Manatee and Sarasota County, most of the facilities people think of, the upper and lower lakes and the concession stand and all that sort of stuff, is in Sarasota County. And so the quality of the experience in Sarasota County is determined by the quality of the water coming from Manatee County.
Yeah.
And so this is one of the problems with the artificial boundaries that we've created, where we draw straight lines and say this is one management area and this is another management area. We lose sight of the interrelationship, and we have this situation now where the impacts are in one county and the causes are in another county.
Yeah.
So let's build on the water quality issues. And it seems like we've talked about extreme dry periods and extreme flood periods in the park. And so what we've experienced in the past couple of years is periods of dryness, and then they're interrupted by periods of intense rainfall. And that is all the result of a warmer climate. And so it seems like Friends of Myakka River has an initiative to test water quality.
Yeah. So just to take a step backwards for a minute, Friends of Myakka River, as I mentioned, we're a citizen support organization for the park and the river. And over the years, our mission has been to protect the park and support the park however we can. In light of this sense of urgency, we have been working in areas such as the ones that we've already discussed, dark sky, water quality, with the understanding that if the park gets destroyed, everything else that we're doing is for nothing. And so water quality, the park is the river is the park. If as Jono mentioned, the river begins in Manistee County, where it is not designated wild and scenic. There are less regulations, there is less protections for the river in Manistee County. And where we became very, very concerned is in the aftermath of Tropical Storm Debby, there was a massive fish kill north of the park, immediately south of two new golf club developments that are being put in directly on the river in Manistee County. And that's where we started getting very concerned about water quality.
Okay, so you have engaged in training people to collect water samples, is that right?
Well, yeah. So the first step, of course, was some of the local residents reached out to the appropriate regulatory agencies, including the Department of Environmental Protection. And unfortunately, compliance inspections found that there were violations occurring where there were very, very high levels of turbidity measured. So it very, very, generally speaking, turbidity is a measure of how much stuff there is in the water. And so there was a lot of stuff leaving these developments and getting into the waterways, which was basically clouding up the water. And that is an issue, and that is not supposed to happen. The development has put in measures that they say should control this. We are still concerned because, again, as Jono pointed out, if things are happening north of the park and getting into the water, it's going to get to the park. It's going to continue down the river. So we've been working in partnership with the Suncoast Waterkeepers, which is a fantastic organization here in Sarasota that helps protect our waterways through scientific testing and advocacy. And we have been training local residents to take regular measurements. And yeah, we're just, you know, first line of protection for the river to make sure we know what's going on.
Well, so some of our listeners may be familiar with the artwork of Jean Blackburn, and she's done paintings of the Myakka, and traditionally, historically, the Myakka in many places would have a white sand bottom, and the water would be stained like iced tea, a sort of reddish brown. So by being in the right place at the right time, she would capture images that would have these reddish tones from the water and then green tones from the vegetation and then the blue of the sky. So it created these really interesting compositions. Well, what's been happening with this pollution upstream is that what we think should look like iced tea has started looking more like chocolate milk.
Yeah.
And you can't see the bottom. So not only is it killing fish, it's changing the character of the river. We think of the spring runs to the north as having, you know, crystal clear water, but the Myakka's water was always tannin stained, and that just like our dark skies, we're at risk of losing that due to turbidity.
Yeah, and it's not just the turbidity, because again, the turbidity measures tell you that there's solids in the water that shouldn't be there. We want to know what those solids are. So that's a whole other level of testing, because as folks are aware, when you're putting in a development like a golf course development, they're bringing in grasses that are not part of that habitat. The grasses require upkeep in the way of fertilization and pesticides. So a lot of things that could be extremely harmful to the river and to the park potentially could make their way into the water, and we just want to make sure that we have a sense of what is going on so we can protect the park and the river.
So we can't tell people to join Friends of Myakka, but if you're interested in learning more about it, you can go to the Friends of Myakka River website. And those of us who are members, on February 9th, you're having the annual meeting. Is that right?
We are. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's always a great event out at Myakka Park. And I guess they waive the entrance fee for members?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. This is thanks to the Jelks Foundation. Yeah. They sponsor that every year, which is very, very meaningful. And I think this year's meeting, I think, is going to be extremely meaningful because there is so much to talk about. Mm. And there are a lot of things going on, and it is really, really important for our community and our members to understand what we are doing and, importantly, how they can get involved and support these efforts.
Sarasota County will host a free community cleanup in the Newtown and Beverly Terrace area from 8 a.m. till noon on Saturday, January 25th. And that's a Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Dumpsters for residential customers will be available at the following locations: Newtown Estates Park and Dr. Martin Luther King Way, Sarasota, and 23rd Street and Chester Avenue, Sarasota. Residents may discard household items, yard waste, tree trimmings, other garbage or refuse, but hazardous waste such as paint, oil, gas, electronics, appliances, and computers, they will be accepted at the Newtown Estates Park location. Large appliances will not be accepted at this cleanup. If you're interested, you can dial 311 or call 941-861-5000 or visit scgov.net.
Okay. Recently, the Northport City Commission had a presentation about roads that they would like to build.
Right. So we have the MPO, which is the, I guess,
Metropolitan Planning Organization.
And this is an entity that consists of elected officials from the region, and they allocate funding for different road projects. And so every community, Sarasota County and Northport and the city of Sarasota, everybody has a wish list of what they'd like to do. So, Northport considered five different proposals to move forward. And the two proposals that were the least advanced or that were ranked lower than the other three, one of them involved going north from Toledo Blade Road in Northport up to Highway 72. And the other was even more ambitious, which would be to extend Price Boulevard, which is an east-west road in Northport. Right now, that ends at protected land that borders the Myakka. Well, this road would be extended in this plan and go across numerous wetlands, cut across the Deer Prairie Creek Park, across the Myakka River, across the Jelks Preserve, and then sort of tie in with River Road where Center Road is. And presumably the idea was that people fleeing a hurricane, since there's no real potential for development there, it would basically be a very expensive evacuation route that would take people over to River Road. Well, River Road has its own problems. Mm-hmm. And so I did go down and testify about that. And I think their staff may have been unaware that the Myakka rule that was adopted states that if you have an area that's unimpacted, you cannot put a bridge across the Myakka River. So I was encouraging them to think more about extending a road like Biscayne to the north and creating a new interchange. Now, the interchange cost more than $100 million apiece, probably closer to $200 million. So they're expensive, but as I said, an expensive project that's feasible may work better than a cheaper project that can't be done. So we'll have to monitor these. There's no immediate threat, but what happens with these projects is they bump along for years, and then when you go to challenge them, they say, well, we've been planning this for 20 years. Where were you? And so it's important to establish a record that whenever these things pop up, that citizens get involved and say whether they think they're good ideas or not.
And I think it's important for people to understand that their voices do matter and their voices do make a difference. And we saw that at a recent commissioners meeting with the variance that was requested for the Myakka River Protection Zone.
Yeah, yes, I'd been working for more than 4 years to try and help the Diocese of Venice understand the requirements of the Myakka Act and the Myakka Rule and the Myakka Management Plan. Unfortunately, they hired a firm that I don't think was particularly familiar with the Myakka River and the various rules. And we've been trying to get a DEP and the South District Office interested in creating a little handbook for people, because the Myakka River, the state published a report that was an analysis of all the rivers of the state. And the Myakka was only 1% of all the rivers in the state. So you could have vast experience working and permitting on 99% of all the other rivers in the state, whatever water management district you want to mention. But if you haven't worked on the one state-designated wild and scenic river, then you're going to be unfamiliar with the various requirements. And it's unfair to the homeowners and the consultants and the people that are applying for things to not have a sort of one-stop location where they could get accurate information about what's allowed and what's not allowed and what the reasons for that are. So hopefully we can move forward with that project and help people understand. It's a waste of everybody's time for people to be proposing things that are clearly inappropriate and not allowed. And they've lost 4 years and a lot of money working on a plan that the county commission turned down 5-0. And they actually needed 5 different permits for what they're proposing. They only got 1 permit, and that was because the person from that agency who did the site analysis didn't want to get their feet wet. So, yeah, that was a big victory, but it reflects the need to help people get a better understanding of what the rules are related to a state-designated wild and scenic river.
Yeah, but each of the Sarasota County commissioners expressed the meaningfulness and the importance of Myakka River State Park and the Myakka Wild and Scenic State designation in their remarks when they voted no on the variance.
Yeah, well, the Myakka Basin in Sarasota County is half the area of the county, and you can imagine it's not getting half the resources and half the time and half the airplay. Yeah. It's a very special resource that we're entrusted with and here in Sarasota County. Because it's not spring-fed and because there historically was no cypress along the river, it's distinct from all the other rivers you can think of, from the Caloosahatchee to the Peace to the, all these other rivers have cypress on them, the Hillsborough. Yeah. So it's a very interesting system. Our wetlands, again, with the exception of a couple oddball places in Myakka Park, our wetlands don't have cypress. And so part of the reason the Myakka was so important for the cattle industry was that the cattle could go into these wetlands and graze when it was drier. There's not a lot for cow to eat in a cypress swamp. But in these shallow wetlands that we have, like on the Carlton Reserve and the various ranches that remain in Sarasota County, those wetlands provide valuable forage. So, yeah, it's a special aspect of Sarasota County, and this particular group of commissioners seem to be aware of that.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think is so important for all of us to remember is, regardless, being out there using our voices to make it clear that any changes that could impact the Myakka River and Myakka River State Park are not in the best interest of the public. Because that is something that is so critical for a lot of these suggested changes and variances.
Yeah. So any other issues that you would like to our listeners to be aware of, Mary?
No issues, but opportunities to get involved.
Okay.
We've got a strong presence on social media and on Instagram. I'm also on LinkedIn, where I channel partners, and that's also turning into invite people to connect with me as well. John, or for people to join us and interact with, like this place and this river that we all care.
Having a silent auction again or not?
You know, this year we're doing things a little bit differently. People to engage in games for opportunities to win some very exciting prizes.
Okay. Sounds great. I hope we can be there.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at our calendar.
Yeah, I think we, there was a level of the weir at the downstream end of Upper Myakka Lake. Does anyone want to talk about that?
Well, I can just say that the weir was years ago an effort to somewhat stabilize the lake level. People eventually realized that the lake level needed to fluctuate and that stabilizing it. Here again, this is a case of today's problem. They dug a ditch with culverts, but its function was compromised. It's rotted out. So it was just a general unfolding disaster over a number of decades. But one of the byproducts of all that was people become habituated to going out and photographing. Yeah. And I think took it of like four different species of herons all standing on this weir. Well, it's an interesting photo, but it's not a natural setting.
Yeah.
And so, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that there were obstructions in the river worked against the designation of it being wild and scenic.
Yeah.
So we eventually were able to find funds to remove it, but that set up a lot of people were concerned. There was a concern it was going to drain the lake. And all the water would run out and it'd be a big mud flat or something. And what we found is that the elevation of the lake is determined by a shoal that's downstream from where the weir was. And the fact that the culverts had bypassed the weir meant that the lake was already at a low level. So it didn't drain the lake. But then there were the concerns of the photographers and bird watchers who were used to going there and seeing particular things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think change is difficult. On a positive note, the removal of the weir has had a great benefit for the park's wildlife and for plants. And thanks to these habitat restorations and restoring the natural flow of the river, the park and the river are benefiting. So keeping an eye on the prize of what we're trying to do to the benefit of everyone involved, I think, is really important.
And for paddlers, it was an obstacle. If you put your canoe in at the upper lake and you wanted to go downstream, you had to step out in the water on this weir with uneven footing because it had been eroded and compromised, and then drag your boat over this concrete.
Yeah, and so, for manatees, there were manatee strandings.
Right, so it was not natural.
No.
It's good that it was gone, and I think we just didn't do a good enough job in it on how we were going to get there.
To Our Changing Environment on listener-sponsored WSLR LP Radio 96.5 FM, broadcasting from our downtown Sarasota studios on Kumquat Court. You can also hear our show on WBPV LP Radio 100.1 Bradenton or listen online.
Today's show, number 54, featured Dr. Miri Hardy discussing updates on Myakka River issues and opportunities.
Previous shows of Our Changing Environment may be accessed at the WSLR archives. Go to archive.wslr.org.
If you'd like to be notified about upcoming shows, you can join our Facebook group, Our Changing Environment.
Next week on January 28th at 9 a.m., you can hear the Healthy Living Hour with Dr. Rebecca Acosta.
And tune in at 9 a.m. 2 weeks from today on February 4th for the next episode of Our Changing Environment.
If you're interested in local public affairs, tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. for The Detail, hosted by Kathy Antunes.
And don't forget to check out the live music, public affairs, and other special events at Fogartyville on Lemon Lane, just 6 blocks north of Main Street here in Sarasota.
Stay tuned for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!